As usual, you're in the right place for your poetry information. Planet is the best place in Wales for you to listen to everything that's new, newsworthy and exciting. Today's guests, Kathleen Stansfield and Matthew Jarvis. We'll be looking at My Family and Other Superheroes by Jonathan Edwards, that's Seren. New Monkey by Stevie Krayer, that's Indigo Dreams, and Little Man by Richard James Jones, and that's Parthian. Thank you very much for clicking on the perfect link for poetry. Kathleen, Matthew, thank you very much for coming in. Listeners, you might be able to hear the pitter-patter of rain on the studio here. So you can imagine the relieved looks on these two when they piled in through the door. Kathleen, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. It's very warm in the Planet studio.
Ooh. It is warm, it's true.
Yeah, I heard you had a slight problem at work today.
It was a little cold. I was in hat and coat.
But let's get down to it. What are the general thoughts on these three titles?
They're very different books to take all three together, but that can make for an interesting comparison when you're looking at the three together to talk about. We thought we'd start with Little Man by Richard James Jones. And I think the first thing that struck me when I got my copy through the post from Planets to talk about is that it is a slim book.
It is rather short. On the back cover, it proclaims itself to be a collection. There are, I think, just consulting my copy here, 33 pages of poems, which sounds more to me like a pamphlet. What do you think, Kath?
I would say so. And also, because a lot of the poems are very short, sort of fragmentary, there's a sequence of fragments that runs through. So it does feel like a short book in terms of what you're reading and in terms of looking at it.
Nice production values, though.
Well, yes, it's beautiful. And we did want to talk a little bit about the look of the thing before we move inside it, because it does look like the other recent Parthian collections. It's got a block colour cover with a sort of matte finish with just the text on the front. So it does look like a collection.
Yes, and it's a classy look. I think Parthian have got a very nice brand image for their poetry here, and I'm very pleased to see it. But the contents, we were a little more equivocal about, I think, discussing before the podcast started. And it's not that we don't think there's a poet in the making here.
No, not at all.
But that maybe, perhaps published a little too early?
Potentially, yes. I mean, it's an interesting book because there is a sense of kind of focus to it. There are lots of poems about, it struck me that there were lots about losing things being lost or things being collected up after a sense of loss. So lots of fragments and detritus. There's lots of poems about water and waves and movement and people trying to make connections but not necessarily managing it. So there is a kind of nebulous to it, it felt like, but there isn't then much kind of pulling away from that.
There are some poems which use collections of images, aren't there, and build them up together, sometimes with end stop lines that are quite distinctive. And that's one of the stylistic motifs that runs throughout the collection. But there were, and as you say, there are a sequence of fragments, aren't there, throughout the washed up fragments,
yes.
Which individually, they didn't do much for me. They're very slim. They're observations of what things that are washed up on the beach.
And they're all given times at which they're found and the water levels, aren't they?
So
you've got one that's 11:59 p.m., 4.56 metres, dogfish, dead and stinking, threaded through torn nets.
Yes, they are quite slight, and there's typically three of those in each of the poems,
yeah,
aren't there? But collectively, across the whole of the collection, I quite liked the recurrent pulse that they gave, but they were very slight on their own.
Yeah, they suggest a sense of control and a sense of thinking about the book as a book, as
they
a
do.
Whole collection.
Yes.
And that is really striking and strong, but then I wanted more of a sense of that, I think. I mean, it was interesting what you're talking about in terms of the list poems almost, collections of things, their objects, items given in a list, but there is a sense that they're presented with resonance, but I wasn't really sure to what end. really.
There were some more. There was one very overt list poem, 10 pieces of advice I should have listened to. And clearly there's an attempt at leavening the thing with humour. So they are listed by, there's a variety of things that are listed by number 1 to 10. And 10 finishes, always end poems structured by number on an odd digit. It seemed, I can see that's trying to be funny, it seemed maybe a wee bit heavy-handed.
Yeah, I did think that the poems that were striving towards, as you say, that kind of leavening idea, a bit more comic, ludic, a bit more self-aware often. They're often commenting on the nature of seeing and understanding the world and writing poems. They, for me, were less successful. I think Jones is a really brilliant poet when he's actually talking about things with depth. And he's giving himself time and space in a poem to actually talk about something in a meaningful way.
It's worth pointing out to the listeners that this is Richard James Jones's first collection. And Matthew, I believe in the past we've discussed the powerful position that a pamphlet can give a newly minted poet, if you like. I mean, he's been published in magazines and journals plenty. Dragging you back to the early point of, is this a pamphlet masquerading as a collection? Do you think it would have been better had they simply presented it as a pamphlet? I mean, I know Parthian don't really do pamphlets. However, is this an occasion where that has been missed?
I think so, possibly. I mean, one thing that would have happened if it was a pamphlet is that some of these poems wouldn't have made it in, because this is an odd length book. It's a bit long for a collection, but it's not. It's a bit long for a pamphlet, rather, but it's a bit short for a collection. And I think if this had been a pamphlet of, say, 20 pages, then some of the poems wouldn't have made the cut, and that would have produced a stronger book to then build on for a collection.
I think I'm very much inclined to agree with this. And it's not, for me, there's not a sense here that this is not something I'm pleased to see published. I'm pleased it's out. I think this is, Richard James Jones is a poet with potential. And there are flashes here where you think, yes, there's something going on here. But I think Kath's right. Maybe this one needed honing down to a slightly shorter volume, and then in a couple of years' time, a fully-fledged collection.
Absolutely. There are some brilliant pieces in here. What We Learn, you know, a poem about snow, but also kind of entering into adulthood as well.
Would you like to read a little bit out?
Yeah, I will. The first time he can remember snow, the dog escaped over a collapsed fence straight under the wheels of a passing car. The sound of the last air hurrying from the dog's lungs sounded like an unfinished cheer. The driver pointed to skid marks in the ice. A neighbour said he'd write to the council about gravel, but never did. I think when he lets himself, there's a real pathos to the way he talks about incidences, and there's a real restraint. And a great simile, the air hurrying from the dog's lungs sounded like an unfinished cheer. I think that's brilliant.
Yes, there's no fear of the simile there.
Absolutely.
He grasps it very well. Actually, interestingly, and we hadn't planned this, this is one of the poems I picked out as interesting too. I thought there was that dark sense of trying to deal with mortality, this is a prose poem.
Yeah.
And I think he handles the prose poem really quite well.
And that's because there's a narrative, and he follows the narrative. The poems that were less successful, those list poems, because they're just things. There's nothing else there. There isn't an overarching reason why, there isn't a narrative drive. I think that actually he's a great storyteller, and I think he should give into that more.
I think that's very nice advice.
That's a
very good place to end, probably.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's great for a first collection for somebody to show so much potential.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think he's a great poet.
Yeah, great. Well, shall we crack on then? We've got a New Monkey by Stevie Krayer. Stevie's been writing poetry for some time, of course. Where's this collection in your minds? Matthew, do you want to jump in on that?
Well, I think this is probably the middle of the three. This is a much longer collection. This is approaching 80 pages. And maybe there's a sense here that a few of the pieces could be lost. It's divided into three sections. And I think the section that compelled me most was the final one, actually, in which there were some, for me, quite chilling contemplations of the changing planet and humanity's potential fate within that. Kath, did you find any of the sections compelled you more than the others?
I would agree with it was the third, the final one, that I found most interesting. I think because the concerns there had a real pull to them. I was convinced by what was being said, whereas some of the earlier sections, the first one has, you have a sense that they're perhaps more personal poems. They deal with individual relationships between people. And I sometimes felt that they lacked a bit of focus. I felt I was a bit excluded from what was being talked about as a reader. And there were some poems that dealt with war in a generalised sense in that section, which I didn't find particularly convincing. Whereas the poems in the last section, I just had a feeling that the concerns at their heart were that the poet was committed to and managed to convey in a really startling way.
In relation to poetry, I don't mind being somewhat confused, and I didn't entirely understand a poem in the final section called Mass for the Oort Cloud.
I love that poem.
But I enjoyed it very much indeed. It made me want to find out what on earth the poet was talking about, quite what an Oort Cloud is, something to do with meteors? Or anyway, I'm going to have to look into that in a bit more detail.
Google that and email us if you don't mind, listeners.
And it starts off with an overtly corny piece of humour. You know, it knows it's being corny.
Yeah.
"'Twas a dark and stormy night, and the captain turned to Higgs Boson and said, 'Boson, tell us a story.' So the boatswain began. 'Twas a dark and stormy night, and the captain turned to Higgs Boson and said, 'Boson, tell us a story.' So the boatswain began."
Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that from that point, it's a sequence, and each little poem does all sorts of different things, and it's sort of blending prayer and physics in a really interesting way.
It is, and it is structured around Credo, Benedictus, Agnus Dei, Sanctus, Gloria, Dies Irae, Kyrie Eleison.
Mm.
And what I also liked about that sequence, actually, is that at this point it becomes more open field in terms of form. So you've got shorter lines, you've got heavy enjambment, you've got fragmentation, you've got this little unit, some lines are only one word long. And for me, that was a bit of a revelation, because a lot of the poems in this collection are quite heavy quatrains. And I felt that it was towards the end of the book, in this final section, that form opens up a little bit more. There's more variety, there's more energy to some of the lines, and that's partly perhaps because of the subject matter that's being talked about. It is kind of energising, I felt.
There is, you're right about elsewhere in the collection, there's some quite straight form poems, particularly with some fairly straight rhyming. But the end, that final section certainly goes out, the collection goes out with a lot of energy.
Yes.
It finishes with quite a lot of achievement.
Which is, I think, a really excellent way to structure a book, I would say. I think that's, again, thinking about the idea of control and, you know, what we were talking about in relation to the first book as well, I got the impression that there's a great deal of care gone into managing these poems in terms of where they're cited and how they relate to one another. And that's quite satisfying, actually.
And can we say that perhaps in that we see an experienced poet?
I would say you probably can, yeah.
Well, her last collection, I believe, is 10 years ago.
Really?
With Gomer. And that's for the listeners who are questioning the comet. So that's quite a large gap.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she's been published in magazines and journals in the meantime. And in fact, I know that she's appeared in Planet during that time.
Mm.
I find it interesting that you use the word experience there, because sometimes a length of time can unsharpen the wit, but it doesn't seem to be the case this time. And also, I wonder if you could expand on the differences between the sections and why do you think it's been laid out like that?
Well, each one starts with a kind of epigraph from Rilke and big questions. So there's where do we come from is the first one.
Mm-hmm.
The second section is entitled where are we, and then the third one is where are we going. So I mean, what a way to structure a collection. It's a risky thing to do, to pose massive questions like mm-hmm. that, as if you're going to answer them. But I quite admire that, actually.
That's very interesting, because in the previous podcast, I believe Richard Margraf Turley was asking the same question. When you preempt a section with quite large ideas and then perhaps not get near answering the question, then you leave a sense of space there. Were you satisfied with this collection?
Well, certainly by the end, I was enjoying myself. And the where are we going, I don't know whether the poet would assume that she's answered those questions, but she's certainly worrying about where we're going. So by the in the poem Weather, which is actually quite a longish three-part sequence, We get at the end of section two, she starts to worry about where we're going environmentally, and she ends, "And I'm wondering of your grandchildren and mine just now playing football so heedlessly in the invisible haze of exhaust, who will make it to an overcrowded Ararat? Will you go, Lassie, go, and we'll all go together."
But that's not to say that the whole collection has that kind of very sort of somber note. There are some moments that are quite funny. There's a playfulness with imagery. It's a real mix, this collection, I think. But then some of the poems are, as I mentioned, the war poems earlier, for me, weren't quite as successful. But when you tackle so many themes, I mean, she also talks about conflict in the Middle East here, yeah, as well. That's a huge thing we haven't mentioned yet. When you're covering that many enormous things, even with 80 pages, which is a long poetry collection, you're not going to be able to give everything even cover, you know?
She's a poet who isn't afraid about tackling big ideas, is she?
We should always commend,
Absolutely. And I think I'd rather see poets aim high and fall a bit short,
yeah, absolutely,
than aim low and not do much. Yeah. I think the praise on the back cover from Philip Gross and Anne Klusener in particular is very, very high praise.
Mm.
I think that's interesting, although I appreciate its puff on the back of a book, its blurb. But nonetheless, I think people are recognising the fact that someone here is, that this poet is trying to do something quite ambitious.
Well, that's a pretty good point, I think, to jump on to the next collection, which is My Family and Other Superheroes, a title which I particularly enjoy. And that's by Jonathan Edwards, and the publisher is Seren. Now, Jonathan, he's got a couple of awards under his belt, the Terry Hetherington in 2010, and I think this one is up for the Costa Book Awards.
It is, and it was on the shortlist of the Fenton.
That's right. Is this merited? What, Catherine, why don't you take this one?
Well, I think it's great. This book is so my cup of tea. Everything about it, from the title, from the cover, which has an illustration, a painting of a man, but the focus is that you're right underneath his shoe. But instead of being menacing, it's quite joyous. There's a sense that this person on the cover is grabbing you for a hug. And there's a lot of that in the poems. Lots of poems about family and community, observed with a sharp eye and, not a sentimentalising view either. There's a risk with some of the subject matter that Edwards covers that it could be cloying sometimes.
But it's really not.
No, it isn't. And that's such a skill, to be able to walk that line,
yes,
and not slip on the other side.
I'm a massive fan, I have to say. Yes. I think his capacity to observe, to create observations of character and of interactions, and the emphasis on family so carefully done without falling into sentimentality in the first section of the book, have to say, I'm almost tempted to say, right, let's finish the podcast here. Yeah, I think this is a grand collection. Just go out and buy it.
A great big gold star.
Yeah, I think so. I don't necessarily, although we've previously referred to blurbs, I don't necessarily find they're always desperately helpful. But on the front cover of this collection, Seren have quoted David Morley, and the quote is serious, hilarious, and a beautiful event. And I think that's right. Mm. And I wish this collection all the success in the world. There is energy, there is vitality. He's so comfortable within his own style. He's a greater observer of people, relationships, communities. Fascinating. And he's willing to speak up for things that clearly matter to him, like there's a poem about the Chartist mural in Newport, which was controversially destroyed.
Well, he's been published widely again in magazines and journals, but this is his first proper collection. Are you surprised, Catherine, that this delivery is so strong?
Not really. I mean, a lot of his poems have won competitions, big competitions, or been highly placed. So he's won the Ledbury this year, I think, and was a runner-up in the Cardiff as well. I mean, these are big competitions. Mm-hmm. You've got so many people entering, and there's just a charm with these poems, I think. They just win you over. And I was because I'd heard so much about this book, not least from Matt Jarvis, I was almost prepared, to think, well, someone's got to take, a stern line, with it. And but it was great. One thing that did jar for me very slightly, and I think that this is probably just an individual taste issue, but it's interesting to note anyway is that a lot of the poems have a very godlike stance. They take a godlike perspective, this kind of omniscient view, and there's a sense of the artificiality of looking back and reconstructing a memory. So there are things like the place where I'm not yet born, but I'm talking about. There's that idea of actually reminding us all the time of the act of looking and constructing a poem and thinking about these things. And that is refreshing, but it's using quite a few poems, actually, especially in the first half of the book, and that jarred very slightly for me. When you see those poems put together, that does come across quite strongly.
It's very self-conscious, though, isn't it? View of Valley's village from a hill. He actually says, from here, you feel the way God feels if God is lonely. From here, I could destroy everyone I know by blinking. From here, I could step off the world. Yes, you're right. It is a recurrent approach, but it's very self-consciously adopted.
Absolutely. And that in itself suggests something about his kind of perhaps poetic temperament, I guess. It is very knowing, and it is, you know, you have, again, think about this idea of control. You have an idea that he knows exactly what he's doing all the time and that you're in safe hands. And that's wonderful.
And he's comfortable in his own skin, isn't
he? Yeah, and form as well.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, you put it better than me.
I haven't thought about form as skin, but I will.
There's a gentle undercurrent of humour consistently running throughout. Does that become problematic at any point? Because it's very difficult to deliver humour in poetry.
Well, I don't think so, because it's not sneering humour. It's very affectionate. So even the talk man who he writes about, who I think would have annoyed me furiously, is still dealt with affectionately and given the time of day.
Are we saying talk? Some mobile phone provider?
Yes, the bloke selling talk in the arcade is
okay,
the poem.
Right, no.
The poem. He's got the opening line, the spiel. The feel for people knows the time to look into your eyes, touch your arm, to hang back, play it calm, to open up about his life, to ask about your children, your wife. He's got your future waiting for you. Just reach out and take it. His brunette student sidekick advertises herself, but our man's got the pen, an afternoon of chatting up men, and when at 5 he packs up his tongue for the day and walks into the world, just like you, like me, like anyone. He's got the air, the night, the setting sun. I don't think I would have liked that character, but Edwards has the sympathy to listen and to paint the picture and to end up acknowledging his similarity to all of us. And this guy is presented to a certain extent like a poet, someone who has to pack up his tongue for the day.
Thinking about that idea of comedy and how you maintain that over a collection, and is that a risky move? Towards the end of the poem, there's some more wonderful pen portraits that he has throughout the whole thing, but a lot of them are quite surreal, the animal poems in particular, and some of them are quite dark in terms of where they end. So he's using different kinds of comedy, I think. It's not hitting the same note all the way through. And again, that's perhaps reflected in the way that the book is structured into these four sections.
Well, that's great. I'd imagine that's a pretty strong note to bring this podcast to an end.
Yes, but can I just say that the final poem, On the Overpass, we have a poet here who's willing even to sound like a kiddie's book. I get so bored. Listen, here's a lorry. It goes whoosh. Then the wind goes whoa.
But then, you know, what follows that, it's too cold to stay up here for long, really. But I like to make up stories in my head. Is this you, lovely boy, speeding your courser towards me, your friend in the passenger seat, big-eyed, looking up now through the windscreen? That's a moment of absolute horror for me at the end of that poem. And the fact that it moves from that sort of knowing, childlike phrasing to that, for me, horror film ending shows great mastery, I think.
The mastery of perspective as well is interesting, isn't it? Because he's able to empathise with an awful lot of different positions, which shows great character. But before his head becomes too large...
Yeah, we've got to find something to bring him down. I don't know, is the colour of the collection wrong? the font dodgy? No, sorry.
It's too many words on the back cover, that's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
I would agree with you there.
Too many words on the back cover, absolutely too many.
Seren can be pleased with themselves and Jonathan Edwards. Good luck with the Costa Book Awards.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Thank you very much, Matthew. I hope you've warmed up a little bit by now. Gesticulating while poetry courses through your brain, it always warms the heart. Thank you very much, listener. You have been very patient with us, but please join us next time because we'll be looking at a different set of collections. Thank you, and dabble. And one more thing, please do get in touch. Use our hashtag planet_TWI. Catherine Stansfield and Matthew Jarvis, they both knock around Twitter as well. So let them know if they've been terrible with your work.